Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Before we get into this interview today, I want to put out a little disclaimer. I work very hard to keep politics out of this podcast, and this podcast exists to help veterans and their families, regardless of which side of the aisle you find yourself on. And I don't want someone to get turned off because they're on the opposite side of an issue that the guests might be talking about. I just try not to get into political topics. Now, with that said, we're going to be talking about guns today. And I know that's a very political topic, but it's not my intention to polarize anyone on either side with this episode. It's not a pro-gun episode. It's not a pro-gun rights or pro-gun control or anything like that. It's not anything like that in this episode. It's just talking about the reality of the fact that there are people with guns and who have access to guns in this country, regardless of what you might think about it. So I think if you listen all the way through, you'll find that what my guest has to say today is going to be beneficial no matter what side of the position you're on with the gun control argument and things like that. So with that said, with that out of the way, today my guest is Sarah Joy Albrecht. Sarah is co-founder and executive director of a nonprofit called Hold My Guns. Their mission is to connect responsible firearm owners with voluntary private offsite storage options during times of mental health crisis or other personal needs. So welcome to the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Thank you, Scott. Yeah. My name is Sarah Joy Albrecht, and I founded Hold My Guns because I'm a range safety officer. It means I work at a gun range and the firing line, and I help keep people safe. And when we lost a young member of our community to suicide by firearm, my kids and their friends came to me and said, "Mom, Mrs. Albrecht, we really need to do something. Our friend has died. She had access to a firearm. And, you know, we do care about rights. But on the other hand, what do you do in a situation where someone who's not doing well has access to a firearm?" And so I started to look into it, and I realized that here in the state of Pennsylvania, it's illegal to give a firearm to a friend for safekeeping unless they have a license to carry a firearm. And that pertains to pistols, but not necessarily rifles. And I realized that that could be a barrier because not everyone has a friend who has a license to carry. And even if they do, it doesn't mean that that friend has safe storage in their home. You know, we wouldn't want someone to be doing a favor and then having like a two-year-old have access to the firearm. And then even then, if someone had a friend that had a license to carry and they had a storage safe at home, it doesn't mean that it's someone that can be trusted not to gossip. And so it was really important to find a storage option that was offsite, that protected property, but also was respectful of people's rights. And it was a supportive option for gun owners. And so our hope is that by partnering with gun shops to offer this storage service, that folks can come in, no questions asked. We know that whatever reason why they're storing a firearm, whether they're going on vacation or deployment, or because there's a crisis going on in their home, that whatever reason that gun owner chooses to store their firearm is probably a good one. And so by doing that, it's also a plus because a gun shop has they have the right equipment to store a firearm in a way that protects it and preserves it. You know, you have to be careful, like having climate controlled storage and stuff like that. So it's a way that can really help to protect property and keep it pristine, but also to help people out in a very real and tangible way. So I'm excited. We started it at the end of 2018. It took a little while to get going because, as you might imagine, there's a lot of legal things that have to be looked into. And, you know, it's like you mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's such a delicate topic, but we really, we understand that the right to bear arms is one that's diversely exercised, and we really want it to be an option for people from all walks of life.
Yeah, that's great. And one of the reasons why I wanted you to be on the show is because on this podcast, I like to interview guests who provide different services, things that are not your traditional services that you might think of, you know, when you're talking about veterans and the types of things that they may encounter, and things that may be not be quite as well known. And, you know, we all know about the VA and some of the services that they offer. But I've also known people who said that they didn't want to go to the VA and get involved with them because they didn't feel comfortable with talking about the issues that they were having, and they were afraid that maybe their guns would get taken away because of one thing or another that was going on in their lives. And so talking about services like yours, you know, the things that you guys are doing is a great opportunity to expose veterans who might need this type of service, but just may not know that it either exists or where to find it or anything like that. So you know, I'm really excited to talk to you a little bit about this and find out more about, you know, how this can be, you know, expanded upon and get it out there in front of a whole lot more people, because, you know, really, I think it's a service that's worth looking into, you know?
Absolutely. And it is also my heart to just really be supportive of veterans. My dad is a veteran. He served in Vietnam in the Marines. And, you know, as I started this endeavor, I called him up and I said, "Hey, Dad, what do you think about this?" And he just expressed concern that many times it's not, perhaps even through well-intentioned efforts, that sometimes veterans and mental health can get exploited. And so he said that, you know, having a service that helps veterans to have a sense of self-determination and agency over how they want to handle their problems in their home in a way that makes sense for their unique family situation, really just treats them with dignity and respect. And so I really took that to heart, and I started working with a group, it's a Northwestern Pennsylvania Suicide Prevention Group through the VA here in Pennsylvania. And we're working to bring partner gun shops to some rural counties in Pennsylvania where they have higher rates of suicide by firearm. And so I'm really excited about that. I also spoke at the Department of Defense and Department of Veterans Affairs Suicide Prevention Conference earlier this year. And I'm also have been tapped as a subject matter expert for the Governor's and Mayor's Challenge to prevent suicide amongst veteran service members and their families. So I'm excited that not only are we working hard as a nonprofit, but we've also reached out to, we're working with the VA here in Pennsylvania, and then even at a national level. And what I've seen is that it's changed the conversation about firearms in a way that really destigmatizes it. And, you know, without having to go in too deep, just say, you know, "Hey, we're going to be starting out treatment. And if you have a firearm in the home, we want to let you know that there is a local gun shop, not affiliated with us at all, who can store firearms for you. And if you happen to have a firearm, if this pertains to you, we're just letting you know that the service exists." And what that does is it really empowers that individual to say, "Hey, I can be proud of myself. I know that I needed to get help. I took care of what I needed to take care of. And so I'm going to start out this treatment knowing that I have a say in how things go." And, you know, whenever you have a mental health treatment, whether it's with a veteran or with anybody, really, if they have a sense of agency in their treatment plan, the efficacy of that treatment plan is just so much better. If you start out a treatment to say, "Hey, you know, oh, you called us for help. Well, we're going to confiscate firearms and you have to do all these things." Then they start out that treatment feeling like, "Wow, I just had a right that I thought was inalienable taken away from me just because I asked for help." But we have to understand that a lot of mental health and medical professionals are not gun owners. And so they don't realize, you know, the identity that comes along with having a firearm. And so through some educational conversations, we've been able to just let them know, like, "Hey, this is why it's such a big deal. And here's a way to approach this in a way that is respectful. And you don't have to lose your rights. If a person can go through treatment successfully, then that's a win for everybody. When you get to that point where you have an involuntary commitment, for example, or a confiscation of firearms, what that does is that if in the future, if you ever want to purchase a firearm, you're not going to pass the 4473 form that asks those questions. Have you ever been involuntarily committed, for example? So it really, and not all mental health professionals understand how well-intentioned actions can actually take away rights, which then in turn creates a fear and people don't get help. So our hope is that we can really create this service that empowers people to take care of their private matters before they become public ones, so that they have better outcome and treatment and they have a better say in how they want things to unfold.
Yeah, and that's great. I like going back to what you were saying in the beginning there was how the mental health provider might say, you know, hey, look, there is a service that's available. It's not affiliated with us, but there's a service that's available. I feel like that sort of just de-escalates the whole, you know, stigma that might be around that and the feeling that the gun owner in this case, who might feel like, oh gosh, I'm gonna end up, you know, committed, or I'm going to, you know, lose my rights, or, you know, whatever the case may be, whatever they're feeling or thinking at that time, it empowers them to go ahead and take care of this on their own, rather than just sitting there waiting, you know, for someone to come knock on their door, you know, that they might feel like that kind of thing might happen. And that's not the type of thing that you want to have happen, especially when you're starting off this maybe new relationship with a, you know, mental health counselor or something like that. So, mm-hmm. So it's really great that type of thing is available. But it's not just people with, you know, veterans with PTSD or other mental health issues. Exactly. You know, it's really for, you know, anybody who might have something going on in their families. You know, they could have, you know, a spouse who might be, you know, going through depression or PTSD, or a child who might be having some mental health issues or things like that. And, you know, I know quite a few gun owners, and, you know, all of them want the guns that they have for protective purposes, you know, exactly. Defensive purposes. Yeah. And they want to be able to protect their family. And if their loved ones are a threat to themselves, it just makes sense that, you know, removing the guns from the house for a temporary period of time. We're not talking forever, you know, selling them and never seeing them again. And I think that's the thing that your service is offering is a safe place to store them temporarily, whether it's a month, whether it's a year, whatever the time period is, to get them out of harm's way and then reintroduce them later on down the road.
Scott, you bring up an excellent point, and it's not always the gun owner who's in crisis in the home. Right. And prior to founding Hold My Guns, I was a doula and childbirth educator for 11 years. And I, for whatever reason, just became that person that people trusted and went to when they had experienced sexual trauma in their past. And unfortunately, when that happens, you know, that those abuse survivors sometimes are more prone to having postpartum depression. And I had a client who was a gun owner. She and her husband owned firearms. And she called me one day and she said, "Sarah, I have the gun safe open and I'm looking at my gun. And I really don't want to be alive right now." And I said, "I will be right over." I grabbed one of my older kids and I got a freezer meal out of my freezer, drove over, and I helped her unload her firearms. I separated out the ammunition from the firearms. And I said, "You go take a shower. I know it's been a really hard day." She had just had a baby and she had a bunch of little toddlers still, like she had a young family. I said, "You could take a shower. I'm going to put this in the oven. Just put your feet up." And she hadn't slept in a couple of days really well. The baby was a little bit colicky. And what I really want for people to understand is, just humbly speaking, any of us can find ourselves in a situation like that where, you know, things are just rough for a couple of days and we don't have a break. And we really want to just encourage folks that, you know, we don't have to look at it like, "Oh, that person's crazy. We got to take their firearms." No, it's like, let's just admit that all of us can have a really bad day. And that if you choose to use a firearm, chances are you're not going to survive. So it's really important to come up with a plan, just like, you know, when you create, which it shaped then how I educated my students. You know, we would often talk about postpartum depression, but after that experience, I said, "Hey, you know, if you have firearms in the home, have a plan in case your spouse or, you know, even the husband in that situation." You know, many dads are just wonderful with helping a baby through the night, but then that means they're really tired the next morning when they're trying to go to work, and it just kind of snowballs. So just being understanding to say, any of us can be a situation where, you know, things can just go sideways for a while and our brains are fragile. They can play tricks on us. So let's just make a plan ahead of time. What do we do in a situation where we're facing an unexpected complication in life? What's our plan for firearms? And so that is my message, you know, when I talk to people. And as you said, like, it's a topic that people can get really prickly about, and understandably so. But my ask is just that, you know, hey, think about what your options are. And if that option is a friend and they're lawfully able to store your firearm and you trust them, please do that. You know, if the option is to disassemble your firearm and give the barrel of your firearm to a friend because they don't have a license to carry and you want to keep everything above board in your state, do that. If you have a local gun shop that stores firearms for you and that option helps you out, then do that. So I just want people to think ahead and not think, oh, this is never going to happen to me. It's better, just like when you think through a life insurance policy, to have something in place so that if you need it, you're not trying to think while you're in the middle of a crisis.
Right. Yeah. And it's like preparing for anything. You know, what happens when X, Y, or Z happens, you kind of want to have a game plan for that. You know, when, you know, if something, some other emergency happens, you have a list of emergency contacts that you can call and you can get help. So this is just another one of those steps to prepare yourself for those things that you may not think are going to happen, but they do happen to people. And you may become one of those people at some point down the road. And it's just good to have a plan in place so that you know what to do. Now, so the audience of this podcast is typically in the military and veteran community. And in that community, there are just a lot of gun owners. There just are, you know. There's also a lot of people dealing with mental health issues. And others also have to travel for extended periods of time. You mentioned earlier, like deployments and things like that, but it could be a deployment or it could be stationed overseas temporarily, you know, for a deployment or you know, being stationed in Japan or Korea, Germany, you know, places like that. Yes. And some of those countries, they don't allow you to have guns with you. And so you get stationed over there, you can't bring them with you. And so, you know, a gun owner who might live in the United States and own lots of guns legally, or even just one, you know, I said lots, but it could be any number of guns. They may not necessarily want to sell all of their guns just because they're going overseas for a year or 2 years or something like that. And sometimes that Venn diagram of, you know, gun owners and mental health and deployments and being stationed overseas, all that kind of fits together where those things kind of overlap. And someone who owns guns or has them in their house has a mental health issue or, you know, might be going overseas. And they have nowhere to store them. And I think that's another way that I see a whole my guns coming into play where they are very useful to be able to store things for those people who might be traveling, even if it's a vacation for a week or something like that, or extended like a deployment for a year or more. You know, so those are other situations I could see this being extremely helpful.
Absolutely. We actually lived in Japan for 2 years. It's funny that you said that. I have my Sugaru mug here from when we lived in Aomori Prefecture. We were there because my husband was, he works a defense contractor and he was working on a radar base there. So that was a situation where we had to find an option for storing our firearms so we didn't lose out on our investment. But we had peace of mind knowing that people who shouldn't have they were unauthorized, they shouldn't have access to our firearms, you know, that they weren't. And it really just gave us a peace of mind to know, you know, in our situation that someone who was lawfully allowed to do that was taking care of our firearms. So that's something that also inspired me to just, you know, see that bigger picture. And I think that, you know, there are some groups out there that are working with gun shops, and I applaud their efforts. What's very important about Hold My Guns is that it is not just simply for a mental health concern, that we really offer the service for anybody who needs it, knowing that for whatever reason they need it, it is giving them peace of mind and it's helping their situation. So the other cool thing that we do is as we work with gun shops, we have an opportunity to really help connect members of the gun community. And what we're hoping to do is through working with like sponsorships from gun manufacturers and you know, other folks in the industry, not even within the firearms industry, but other industries as well, to sponsor events for gun shops that help address risk factors, for example, without overtly being about suicide prevention, and also sponsoring volunteer opportunities. And so what that does is, if you, for example, have a sign-up sheet at a gun shop to, let's say, stock the local food bank, what you're doing is you're helping customers to find a sense of value and purpose. They're doing something that is benefiting their community. It's helping the gun shop to shine. It's helping the community to shine and the sponsors to shine. And without really talking about mental health, you're fostering shoulder-to-shoulder relationships and good communication within the your own community. And, you know, one of the highest demographic risk for suicide are men in their mid-40s to mid-70s, depending on, you know, which study you look at. And, you know, that's, they're men who might be going into a time of retirement. They're not, you know, working every day. Maybe they're at home and they're tired of that honey-do list getting longer. And, you know, they just want to go to the gun shop and they're hanging out there, but oh my goodness, ammo is really expensive. So how cool is it, you know, just to say, hey, I'm going to go with my friends and we're going to go clean up a park and we're going to get, you know, some free range time at the end of this as a thank you from our gun shop. So that's a really cool component. We also want to work with events that are like fitness oriented, such as like Go Ruck or the tactical games. And so what you're also doing by that is you're encouraging the gun shop customers and their community to be helping with their physical fitness, which also benefits mental health. And it creates a challenge that they can really have a sense of teamwork. And the other thing is, a moment ago, I mentioned, you know, bringing in educational opportunities. And what inspired me to do that is after my dad got back from Vietnam, he really never had educational opportunities. He was hired right away by a defense contractor. And when Y2K hit, he lost his job. He never really had that training that allowed him to continue through management. And so I went through this system of being on welfare and being at these, you know, like public service type events where they really make people feel awful for needing assistance. And what I learned from that is that there's a way to help people and address some of their personal risk factors in a way that really is uplifting and encouraging. And, you know, in talking to my dad, I said, you know, what would you think if, for example, like, and I'm going to use the example of my friend Tim Kelly, who runs Apache Solutions. He was wounded in combat, and he created a curriculum that helps people who have been wounded as they're in their recovery process to have a sense of dignity and self-worth, and not just see a new normal, but to look for new opportunities to really thrive. And I said, Dad, you know, what if someone like Tim Kelly gave a talk at your favorite gun shop? Is that something that you'd be interested in hearing? He's like, yes, I would love to go and hear a veteran, you know, talk to me about resilience or talk to me about how do you get your finances in order, having opportunities brought to the gun shop where there's no stigma and you're addressing some of those risks for why a person might be feeling suicidal in the first place, you know, not being able to provide for family, trying to overcome an injury, going through a messy divorce. Like, there's just so many things that are unspoken that people carry with them. And to have that sense of community and support, bringing those to the gun shop classrooms, it's an opportunity. You know, normally we're teaching like basic pistol or gunshot wound care or something like that. But, you know, those classrooms they can be used for other things too. And it really brings information to a community that needs to hear it, but in a way that is respectful and really meets the audience where they're at.
That's another great opportunity there, because you're absolutely right. You know, especially like what you were talking about earlier, you know, men in their mid-40s to, you know, maybe 70s or so, going through that transition maybe of retirement or whatever. You know, especially getting out of the military, a lot of times people are getting out of the military right around that, you know, mid-40s kind of age range. And it is a transition. It's a loss of that sense of purpose, sense of belonging. And, you know, if you have no place to replace that, you know, where you can go hang out with other maybe like-minded people and, you know, learn about some of these things like you're talking about in these classroom type environments, it's a very lonely and, you know, isolating kind of situation that you find yourself in. And that doesn't lead to good things usually, you know?
Right. And it, again, it's just that humble understanding that anybody can find themselves in the situation, you know, especially in the past year with COVID, like, you know, when we think about all the activities that our family, you know, we used to do, and then they've, some of them have fizzled out and never came back, you know, that's really hard. So just understanding like transitions in life are real. Not everybody has, you know, a friend group, and especially if, you know, if you're no longer, if you've retired from the military, or maybe, you know, you've moved to a new location, which is something that happens a lot with military families. It's like, how do I find a group of people who are like-minded? I can have fun. And we can talk about things that matter in a way that isn't going to, you know, tip off a supervisor somewhere that I asked questions about finances or whatever, you know. It's just, it's a really palatable way that respects people's privacy, but helps them to get the help they need.
Yeah. And another guest that I had on the podcast a while back was talking about how after getting out of the military, he would think back or go back to the friends that he had in maybe high school or college or whatever. And they just didn't relate with each other anymore. Like they were great friends way back then, but then after his military service, they just didn't relate anymore. So even if you go back to your hometown and there's a whole bunch of people that you know, you just might find yourself in that situation where you're just not relating with those people. And so you may not have that support group of those friends or, you know, other people that you were maybe counting on having, but then you just don't relate with those people and you drift apart, you know?
Right. And then through new service opportunities or new educational opportunities, even if you wouldn't normally hang out with, you know, someone that you met at the gun range or whatever, now you have something in common and you can say, hey, you know, we stocked that food bank last week. Let's, you know, 2 weeks from now, let's go, you know, clean up a park or help to build a wheelchair ramp for one of our elderly neighbors. And so you're creating something new. And giving something to look forward to that really has a sense of value to it. It's not just let's go to a movie and feel like we're wasting time, but actually be able to use skills and make a difference in people's lives. And of course, what that does too is it really helps to address some of those underlying feelings that you were talking about of loneliness and not relating to people. So it really, again, gives the individual an opportunity to, you know, to make new friends and to do it in a way that that they're rewarding relationships.
Yeah. And I know around here, so I'm in Arizona, we have a lot of outdoor like public shooting areas, and they're really just like out in the desert with a hill for a backstop kind of thing. And it's not, there's nothing formal or official about it. It's just, you're literally going out to the desert and shooting, and they get, those places get trashed with people just leaving garbage and not picking up their brass and things like that. And it's just strewn all over the place. And a great opportunity for people who are looking for some of these things, these kind of like community building type things, especially some of these gun shops that might be around here, is to host a cleanup day where you go out to one of these areas out in the desert and go pick up some of the junk that's been left behind. You know, people bring a pickup truck or whatever and some trash bags or whatever, fill up those things. And that's, you know, kind of a bonding experience too, where you get to know some of these people that you might be out there working with. And it also helps the gun community. It helps the environment. It helps a lot of things. And so that there's a lot to feel good about after you're done working. You know, maybe not if you're doing it right now, because it's about 115 degrees out here. So you probably wouldn't feel too great about it right then. But, you know, maybe sometime in, you know, October or November when it's a little bit cooler, you know, you'd feel pretty good about it, I think.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's some people who I mentioned earlier who might be a little apprehensive about turning their guns over to somebody. You know, they might just not be comfortable with that. You know, even if it is a licensed dealer and they've gone through this whole program and they have all the legal stuff out of the way. What would you say to some of these people that might be able to ease some of their concerns and build a little trust in this kind of system that's been set up?
Well, first of all, I totally understand and respect why some people might feel that way. Depending on the firearms dealer, if they're equipped for it, you can always have a non-serialized critical part, such as a barrel or a firing pin stored. And in that situation, you don't have to worry about, we use a consignment return process for firearms. But if you're storing a part that is not a firearm, but it is a critical component to the firearm, then you would not have to go through a background check. So for someone who just for whatever reason doesn't even mean that something's in their background, if they would want to store a non-serialized critical part, they're welcome to do that. And again, just kind of going back to what I was saying earlier, this is an option. And some people have other options, but many people don't. And so what we want to make sure is that no one falls through the cracks. And so providing this option for people who need it, I would encourage people to just recognize that. And not everybody is blessed to have friends or family members who can help in this way. The real important thing is to make sure that you have a plan that works with your values and your unique situation. And that is the greater message there. So for someone that, is seeing that things are starting to go sideways in their own home, I would just encourage them to exercise the options that they have. If it's working with a Hold My Guns partner, what that would mean is they would make an appointment. They would call and they would say, hey, can you hold my guns? Let's schedule a time. They would let them know what kind of firearms they need storage for so they can clear out some space in the safe. And then what they do is they fill out a storage contract. It's a business type contract. It says this is make, model, and serial number. They have to, whenever a firearms dealer is holding a firearm, they do have to make a note of it in their acquisition and disposition logbook. But it is not something that, anyone can just go in and look at. It's a protected book. There's a limited list of folks who can look at that. And we know that, it is protected in the sense that you have to have a warrant to just read it. You can't just go in. If you're not a gun shop employee, if it's not an ATF spot check type situation, that there are a specific set of rules that go with who has access to that book. And I know that talking about that, it might make some people cringe. And I totally understand that. And I want to reiterate that our service is not for people who are prohibited. That's outside of the scope of the service. So for individuals who want to use the service, who might be in a situation where they have become prohibited, I encourage you to talk to your attorney and work out, with a local gun shop and their attorney, hey, I need to do this to follow a court order. And I encourage you to do that because if you take a proactive approach, chances are you'll get to keep your firearms and it will show like, hey, they've done their due diligence. This court order has expired. Now they can safely pick up their firearms and everything's above board. So our service is not for individuals who are prohibited, but if they start to see things going sideways and they're like, you know what, I'm not going to let it hit that tipping point. I'm going to take my firearms in voluntarily. I'm going to store them. I'm going to work with my friends and family. And we're going to decide, when's a good time to bring a firearm back into the home. And that's on our team. It's not involving other people. And by our team, I don't mean Hold My Guns. I mean, the individual and their friends and family, whoever is their support people, that they can have a conversation and they can determine when it's best for that individual to, hey, I think it's okay. I talked to my wife, I talked to my best friend and I've gotten help for these things. I'm doing a lot better. I'm no longer struggling with this or that. So I'm going to pick up firearms. So I don't know if that quite answered your question, Scott.
No, I think so. Yeah.
It's multifaceted,
Yeah. There is a lot to it. There's a lot of different aspects that go into it and not every situation is going to be the same either. Right. There's going to be a lot of different things going on in everybody's lives and everyone's situation is going to be a little bit different, but a way to kind of think about it in a way that makes this accessible to people and that they're not going to be afraid to go and bring their guns to a place like this. One other question I had kind of along those lines is, so let's say someone brings in their guns to a gun dealer, and you know the gun dealer is in the business of selling guns. Is there any danger that their guns would end up getting sold to you know a customer of this gun store in this situation? How is that contract laid out, and how does that kind of protect the guns and keep them from being sold off like that?
You know what? I'm sure that's everybody's big fear, because mistakes do happen, right? So I could not tell you in good faith that that will absolutely never, never happen. But here are some things that would help prevent that from happening. First of all, when the owner of the firearm brings in their firearm, that make, model, and serial number are recorded so that when the gun shop is having possession but not ownership of the firearm, it's logged in their logbook. And so whenever a transfer of firearm happens, they have to verify that make, model, and serial number. So if another customer came in and they were like, oh yeah, I want to purchase that firearm, which by the way, they shouldn't be out in the case, they should be in storage. Right. There is that check that happens on the firearm itself. Hey, this is in the book and this is a storage client. We have the contract right here. So there's that. And of course, description of the firearm and that kind of thing. The contract has wording in it that if the customer chooses to sell their firearm, then they could do that, but that there are steps in place. So let's say a person, they have taken the firearm out of the home, they voluntarily stored it for a while, and then they just say something like, you know what, I really don't think this is working for us to have a gun in the home anymore. I'm finding that I have, for whatever reason, our family situation is still a little bit hairy, and I would just rather sell the firearm, because it's recorded in the same way as a consignment and a consignment return process. Then they can call up the gun shop and they can say, I would like to sell the firearm. And they should know upfront, what's the value of my firearm. But at least in that case, they're recouping their investment cost. And they're not just, if they were to turn it into a police station or something, or even a buyback event, great, here's your $100 gift card, but that firearm costs $3,000 or whatever, it's not fair. So anyway, there are options for folks to sell the firearm to the dealer if they make a choice not to bring the firearm back in the home. But because you have that contract in place with a low monthly payment as well, which that is that I know you didn't ask, let me tell you anyway, the benefit of having a low monthly payment is that it doesn't discriminate against people, this person has a mental health issue, this person's going on vacation. If everyone's just paying a low storage fee, like $10 to $20 a month for a firearm, or maybe they might have the first ones this much and then subsequent have a discount cost. We leave that up to the gun shops for their market value and what they can offer. But by doing that, you really treat everyone the same, to say, for whatever reason, we're going to store this firearm for you. Gun shops can create scholarship funds if they want to. It might look like a roundup transaction at the cash register. And they might say something like, hey, customer, would you like to contribute to our Hold My Gun scholarship fund? Folks can bring in their firearm for storage. If they can't afford it to pay a monthly storage fee, then we can scholarship them. And then each month those clients can contact the store and say, yes, I do need a scholarship for this month. And the money would be there, but it allows the gun shop to know the customer's intention, and it keeps something happening in a bad way, where a gun shop customer might ghost the gun shop and leave them with a big pile of firearms, but never come back and never make payment on it. So having, even in a scholarship situation, there's still communication between the gun shop and the customer, so they know what that intent is. And that's part of the contract as well, that they can, if a scholarship is needed, then they can discuss those terms. But
And that's good. It's good to know that there's checks and balances in place, and that there are some, safeguards there. So that if you do bring your guns to one of these gun stores and bring them in for storage, that it's not like you're just never going to see them again, unless you choose that that's what you want. It's most likely going to be a situation where they're going to be there when you're ready for them and you can just go pick them up. Now, flip that around, let's talk about like the benefits to the gun shop owners, the local shops that, you know, you talked a little bit about some of the classrooms and, you know, bringing people in and, you know, kind of a little bit of the community benefits. But, you know, are there other reasons that gun shop owners would want to take on this type of thing? And how is that a benefit for them? And what have you seen in some of the shops that you've worked with that has benefited them?
Well, gun shops, they're in business to, you know, and they to sell firearms, but also to keep their customers happy, which is another reason why it's not in the best interest of a gun shop to sell a firearm that wasn't intended for sale, right? Because they would have a very upset customer. Right. And I forgot to mention in the previous question or previous answer that we also require gun shops carry general liability insurance. So if there's damage to the firearm or something that happens like that, you know, there's insurance for that purpose, which is a good business practice to have. So we vet our storage partners, which again is just that checks and balances that that we want to build trust with the gun shop customers. It really helps gun shops to shine, to say we absolutely care about our customers so much so that if they ever need storage, that we provide this. We're sensitive to the needs of our community. We're, you know, doing volunteer work in our communities, and Hold My Guns provides a pathway for them to do that with some funding. So, you know, a lot of times, when there is, unfortunately, an incident that you see in the news, you know, it really can demonize gun shops and gun owners to make it feel like, you know, that people are all out to get people and be mad at them and that kind of a thing. And this really is a way, whether it's, you know, offering storage or working in communities or providing educational opportunities, it's a way to say, actually, we care, and that that's a really unfortunate situation, but it does not really characterize the majority of gun owners. Most gun owners are very responsible people, and they own firearms to protect the people that they love, and it's their right to do that. So anyway, it is opportunities for foot traffic, opportunities for recognition, opportunities to save their customers' lives if needed. And it's something that they can truly be proud of. The other cool thing is that we're working to provide suicide prevention training. We're doing that even on Monday night here in Pennsylvania, coming up on the 26th. And through that suicide prevention training through the QPR Institute, it actually comes with a certificate. And so our goal is to help firearms professionals like firearms instructors and range safety officers to have those credentials that they can actually share. You know, when I look at, consider someone to teach me a new skill with firearms, I look at all of their credentials. And so seeing that on there, that they've had suicide prevention training, it means that they are aware of, you know, that they're there to help people if they need it. And they can be someone that, you know, maybe a client is looking at their page and they say, hey, you have suicide prevention training. Can you tell me about some local resources? Because maybe my friend needs to have some, you know, resources or something like that. And that was inspired because two of our board members who are firearms instructors had situations where there was an individual who had intended to take their own life on the range. And in both cases, thankfully, they recognized some signs. They recognized something was off. In one case, the one individual stopped the lesson. In another case, there was a phone call that happened where the client admitted what they had intended to do. And so, you know, had it not been for their wherewithal, you know, it does happen that people take their own life on the range. So by providing education to firearms instructors and giving them that actual credentialed certificate that they can, you know, proudly display, it also creates awareness in the firearms community to be aware, to be situationally aware. We teach that in, right, you know, while you're at the mall or the grocery store. So you also want to be situationally aware on the range, and you want to be prepared to help those around you if they're experiencing suicidal ideation.
I think that's great. And it's a great benefit to the community. It's great benefit to the gun shops to be able to offer this type of thing. I would think anyways, it would set them apart from other, you know, competitors in their market. And so I think it's a win-win all around to have this type of service available in the community. So that's absolutely great. Well, it has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today about Hold My Guns and all the things that you guys are doing to help the gun owners across this country to store their guns safely, especially in times of need or mental health crises, traveling, deployments, things like that. Where can people go to get in touch with you and find out more about Hold My Guns?
HoldMyGuns.org. We are really excited about the website. We just did a relaunch over Independence Day weekend. I'm really proud of it. It just has a sleek new look. There's some great encouragement from folks in the gun community and ways to get involved. So check us out there. And then we're on social media at HoldMyGuns.org on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. So find us there and get in touch. We'd love to hear from you.
Perfect. And I'll have links to all of those, your website and social media accounts in the show notes. So anyone who's looking to get in touch with you, go ahead, check out the show notes. You can click through from there. And again, it's been amazing to be able to talk with you about this. And I think we did a good job of keeping politics out of it too. So.
Yeah. And really having a non-legislative solution does that. And I, you know, when you can really get to the heart of the matter and help people where they are and provide support, regardless of their political affiliation, it really helps to save lives. It makes a difference. And that is our goal. So it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you as well, Scott. So I can't wait till this airs. I'm looking forward to listening to it.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.